the Glazers, and I know this for a fact, the Glazers want Man United to be pay-per-view. They want their matches to be pay-per-view because they can make more money out of it. With Sky determining the matches or BT determining the matches, United don't have a say of when these matches are played. They don't get a bigger cut of the TV money. But now, with this Super League, every team that's there, they can stream their matches on their own platform, MUTV or Liverpool Fan TV, whatever channel, and then make all the profits out of it. That's all it boils down to, is it not? Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and I have three co-hosts with me this evening. It's number one, Steve Eyre, number two, Rodri Giggs, and number three, returning, Saji Burton. Saj, welcome back.
Oh, lovely to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure, mate. My pleasure. How have you been coping?
Oh, the last lockdown was terrible, wasn't it? It's just cold, miserable, and there's a bit of a struggle, but I'm kind of back now. Back up and about, trying to get to the gym. Just constantly got on baggy clothes at the moment.
Yeah, you me both, mate. I finally signed back up to the gym. I'm going tomorrow. I've decided, fuck it, I'm going. I don't care who's there, how many people are there. If I have to throw dumbbells at people to get out of the fucking way, I'll do it. I don't care.
Yeah.
All right, well, great to have you back, man. Steve.
Stel, good evening.
How you doing, man?
Good, you?
Yeah, all good. I've been seeing your videos at the gym on the
setting examples. We can't all be as fit as Rodri. Some of us have to work on it, you know.
How many kilometers do you do now?
18 miles on the bike.
18 miles on the bike. And how long does it take you to do that?
45 minutes.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. I'm used to getting off after 45 minutes. It's the story of my life.
Well, us mere mortals, you know, us not non-former pros, we look at you guys and like, fucking hell, 18 miles in 45 minutes. You know, it's even possible. Yeah. Great stuff. Rod, and you've been on the golf course.
Correct.
How did I know? How did I know? Did the Instagram give it away?
Yeah, it's good exercise, isn't it? Getting out.
Have you got a caddy?
No, you're not good, man. You've got a trolley.
Fair enough. All right, brilliant. Right, oh, Christ. Where shall we begin? Let's save the European Super League for last, because I think that one is worth waiting, the best for last. Let's start with Jose Mourinho. Oh, I shouldn't laugh. Last week, we were talking about him, weren't we, Steve? And we mentioned Ryan Mason and Chris Powell, how they're doing well at Spurs Youth Academy, but we haven't seen many youngsters breaking through. But 7 days, you know, unless you're Craig David, is a long time in football. And Christ, yeah, Jose's gone. Those two have taken the caretaker role. The first game is Southampton in the league, then it's City in the cup. The final at that, what the fuck is going on?
Fortune telling, I think, as well, Stel, because you were leaning towards change, you know, talking about the suspicion of it and could it happen and would it happen? And as you say, within 7 days it has. So I don't think there was too many sticking up for him. But it'll be remain to be seen how they finish the season now and how they go about their summer recruitment. But you would presume now that Tottenham are going to have more of a freeness about them, and possibly you'll see some smiles on faces that you've not seen. And the big decision will be whether Harry Kane stays or not, and whether they can get a trophy in the cabinet.
I know that results were the reason for sacking, but watching him today on Sky Sports News, he seemed like a very relaxed Jose Mourinho. I mean, I'd be relaxed if someone had paid me 30 million quid to leave my job. But I think he's earned close to 100 million pounds in payoffs since the first sacking at Chelsea. This includes the second sacking, Man United, et cetera, et cetera. He could buy his own club now, can't he?
He could. And I don't think in our lifetime he'll ever be out of any, but whatever any of us think of him, I don't think he could be out of anybody's top 10 in terms of the greatest managers in our lifetime. Some may even say in the top five. He was at the peak of his powers a long time ago. A lot would say he's had 17 years in management. I know that there's a few say he's had 1 year in management, 17 times rolled over. He's not really evolved. He refuses to. He plays his way. He's stubborn. It upsets people when he won't change. And it's pretty boring to watch. But Rodri speaks, you know, with a knowledge of what he did at United, as you do yourself, in terms of the trophies and the data, if you like. But but it just wasn't a pleasant time, it felt, and there wasn't really much potential. And that's possibly now how it looks with Tottenham Hotspur, and not pleasant to watch. They still can win the League Cup final against City, because we've seen that City can get beat at Wembley just this weekend. And like I say, the Harry Kane situation, there is, I think, a dark cloud still would be an exaggeration, but I think there's a bit of a grey cloud above Tottenham Hotspur, and maybe they've done something about today by removing the manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Saj, it's been a year and a half, I think 17 months to be precise, since he got the job. Obviously, results haven't been great recently, but Spurs started the season like a house on fire. But the game for me where I think it kind of went pear-shaped was the West Ham result, the 3-3, when they were 3-0 up. And they could have been 4-2 up, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. And that kind of changed the game. But then that comeback from West Ham kind of forced Jose to go back into that pragmatic approach. It's almost as if he didn't trust his defenders. And we spoke about it last week, you know, the quality or the lack of quality. So do you blame Jose Mourinho for his own sacking? Or is there more to it? Because we saw the players crumble in the back end of Pochettino's tenure.
Yeah, no, I don't really blame him. I mean, if you're leaking goals, you revert back to type, right? So you can kind of evolve as you go on. But if you see cracks or problems with your defence, then you revert to type if you've been known as a defensive coach. I mean, a prime example of this when I was playing, when I was at Shrewsbury, we had a decision, a group team decision to just try and play football. We played against Lincoln, lost 1-0. And he said, right, we're just hitting it in the channels. Started hitting in channels, winning games. Everyone likes winning. If you're winning all the time, you don't care if you're playing boring football. But obviously, in the Premier League, you've got egos and people that want to play a certain way because, you know, attractive way. But me personally, I'd rather win and win bad, win ugly. But not everyone's the same way inclined. So I don't know. I don't blame Jose for going back, reverting to type. But then you've got to try and find the middle ground with the players, trying to keep everyone on board and try and push everyone in the same direction rather than kind of digging out players and then splintering off into different directions, which he did do towards the middle and towards the end when things weren't going right.
Answer me this then. When you look at the quality that Spurs have going forward, I think Harry Kane has got 31 goals in all competitions this season, which is the most he's scored under any manager. It's a fantastic stat. And look, we expect to see goals from Harry Kane. We expect to see Son putting in stellar performances, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, again, 17 months isn't a long time when you think about it. Has he really been given the opportunity to build something? Because let's be real, they're in a cup final. I know they were knocked out of Europe. It was a catastrophic defeat in Europe at Dinamo Zagreb. They shouldn't have lost that tie, but they did. Out of the FA Cup. No chance of really getting top four. So has Levy pulled the trigger too soon?
I thought he would have pulled the trigger at the end of the season, but maybe that's aligned with, obviously, the announcement of the Super League and him believing that they're going to get some kind of big payout where you can just pay him off quickly and then try and get a new manager in to entice him with the new, new league that's being formed. But no. 18 months is not enough. What was your question? No, nowhere near long enough. I mean, if you look at it, Jose Mourinho is about a team of workers. And when they worked with Pochettino, they'd run through brick walls for him. Maybe he lost a lot of faith and confidence with the players where they wouldn't do that for him. And maybe that did contribute to him getting sacked.
Okay. Rod, what's your take on all this, mate? Because last week, I know you had some harsh words about Mourinho's post-match comments regarding Oli. But what do you make of this situation? Were you surprised?
I was actually, yeah. Because the 17 months, it's not a massive amount of time, is it? No. But it does upset players and those players up the wrong way. And, you know, this day and age, you know, you just can't do it. Dele had 3 years ago. Dele was talking about Real Madrid and one of England's best players, and now he can't even get a kick in the side. So there's assets dropping. There's other players that he's obviously left out. But, you know, like Sad says, results, if you're not winning, then it's It's not like when he was at United, he did win things, but you know, you'll admit it wasn't great football. It was bad, and when he lost, he did get a lot of stick. Well, if Ollie's lost, because we're playing a more exciting football, and you can see where he's going. But yeah, he just rubs people the wrong way, and I just think the quality of players that he's used to, they just can't hack it. You know, the stats say once they go up, they seem to drop back and invite pressure, and the pressure is too much, and the players that aren't good enough to defend that pressure. So, and ultimately, he's lost his job. So, I'm sure he's not too happy. He looks too balanced tonight. So, not too unhappy, as I say. But I'm sure he would have rather kept his job and tried to see the job through. But, you know, we've said it time and time before, and Fed will say it. Tell you the same, he's experienced it. You know, if you don't win games, you're going to get the sack. So, even though he's trying to do something and he's trying to get players in and trying to involve and trying to make the team better, if you're not winning, then you're not going to keep the job.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when you look at the signings that he made, a lot of them, in fact, most of them were attack minded. I mean, apart from Højbjerg, who's been a revelation for him this season, let's be honest. Doherty, attacking fullback. Reguilón, attacking fullback. You know, Gareth Bale, Bergwijn, Vinicius. So
Gareth Bale's come in there. He's not played. He's not even put him on at sub before Lamella. He's always put Lamella on before him. So, you know, it's not probably, obviously not Gareth Bale coming out saying, you know, I just want to get fit for Wales. Obviously, that would have rubbed up any manager the wrong way. But, you know, he's still a world-class match winner. So, if he's fit, why is he not playing more? So, because he's not a Mourinho player. You've seen it before. He doesn't work hard. He doesn't work back. You've seen that before. When they were 3-0 up and you cut Bale, I think they were 3-1 up and Bale, come on, and it was 3-0. I can't remember it was the game. But, you know, the warning signs were there.
Then. The West Ham game.
No, you just can't trust him to work hard, and obviously I don't know why he even come here. Then, you know, he was all excited when he first come. So that's a weird one. Doherty hasn't worked out. You know, Eric Dyer, he's not a centre half. So yeah, it's just he's made some bad decisions, and decisions that ultimately cost his job.
Answer me this then, Rod. Do you remember when Pochettino got sacked? I seem to remember the show that we did. We were talking about Pochettino getting the sack, and we were saying, well, possibly Jose Mourinho is going to be the next manager, and we were umming and ahhing about it. And by the time I hit that stop button and started to edit, he was announced as the new head coach. So has Levy found a successor, but he's waiting a bit longer to appoint him? Or is he just saying, well, fuck it, let's just wait till the end of the season and then see if Nagelsmann or someone else, Eddie Howe, wants to get the job? I don't know.
I don't know. You see, like you spoke to about last week, Chris, Ryan Mason and Chris Powell, why can't they get the job? Why can't they be given a chance to see how they get on in 7 games? Why aren't they I'm sure they are in the running. They've got the job. So if they win 6-7 games and win a cup final, why would they not get the job? It's like the Ollie effect. He's come in for a stopgap. He's come in and won how many games? And you've got to give him the job. You've given him the job. And look where we are now. So sometimes you can't be looking for them big names. You've got to look, you know, do the players like him? Do the players fit? You ask, that obviously you've seen in the documentary that Harry Kane and Daniel Levy, they obviously talk to each other and he talks to the players. So you just never know. But you'd think, this is why I think it's a knee-jerk reaction, because if it wasn't, they'd have someone in place and to replace him. I just think something's happened behind the scenes, or he's rubbed someone up the wrong way, and Danny Levy's quite nice, he's not working out, and he's just pressing the button to get rid of him.
Fair enough. Well, Steve, you know Chris Powell, having worked with him at Huddersfield, if I'm not mistaken. Now, you've got a guy who's obviously played at the highest level in the Premier League for Charlton. I believe he was an assistant at Leicester with Sven, if I'm not mistaken, is that correct? Yeah. He was with Pardew at Den Haag. There's a derby as well, so he's got a dearth of experience here. Tottenham are probably the biggest club out of the list of teams I've mentioned. That being said, is he the guy to push them forward at least until the end of the season? Because, you know, as Rod said, they've got the players.
Well, for me, you know, putting family aside, he's the best man in I know in the world. I genuinely mean that, and Rodri knows that. I've messaged him a couple of things today, but, you know, the last time he was a leader, it was Southend. They're likely to go out of the Football League. You know, it was a very, very hard job, but, you know, he's been around some elite football teams since, but the last time he was in the saddle, if you like, it was at Roots Hall with a poor team that are probably going to be playing non-league football next year. So he's done amazing to leave that position and then go on to do what he's done since. But it just goes to show everything what you said backs up about his career. And let's not forget, he played for England very late in his career. Very late in his career, he got England caps. And he's a very likeable man. He's a good tactician. He's a good match day coach. He's more than happy to delegate through the week, which I benefited from, to allow coaches to coach and, you know, service and develop the team and the lads and get them going. But he really steps up on a match day because he's got presence. And there are a lot of managers still, some that I've worked with, and they've got different qualities, but they haven't got any presence. Chris Powell can come into a room and he can light it up. If something's already good, he can make it better. He's that type of person. So I'm hopeful for him. There's a couple of suspicions I've got about Tottenham Hotspur. One, I can't believe that Harry Kane wouldn't have been spoken to about the Mourinho situation. And if he would have said anything like, Mourinho's God, he's brilliant, he's amazing, he's the best coach I've worked with, Mourinho wouldn't have left Spurs. I don't believe that. So it makes me wonder what Harry Kane possibly would think of him. And also for Chris Powell, Ryan Mason, as Rodri had mentioned there, and I'm sure there are others, they've not been in that dressing room all season. You don't even know if they've been at the home games. They certainly won't have been at the away games, but Ledley King's been at every one. So if we're trying to promote and he's been part of it, A, why isn't Ledley King gone with Jose Mourinho? And B, if they think that much of him, why has he not got the job? That would be a question I'd ask.
Saj, over to you. Have you got the answer to that?
I think he made a great point there about Harry Kane. I mean, it's great suspicion there that maybe he's already told him that he wants to leave at the end of the season. So maybe they just want to just start afresh with a new manager. I mean, I haven't got a clue what's going on with Tottenham. I mean, Levy's his own man. I'm not sure how much influence the sporting director or technical director, if they've got one, has there. But they don't seem to be running in unity. I mean, from as in boardroom between the boardroom and manager. So I'm not really too sure what's going on there. But it's all fun being an Arsenal fan, watching them there the most. It's fine.
So much uncertainty, yet the Arsenal fans are laughing at Spurs. Wow. All right, let's talk about the action then. Back to you, Steve. Sorry to mention this, but City's quadruple challenge is done.
Yeah.
1-0 loss against Chelsea. To be honest with you, I didn't watch all of the game. I had my separate team on the telly and I was flicking over. But every time I was watching, I had my eye on the City game, Chelsea were storming forward and City only had three or four players back, including the goalkeeper. So were City playing a high line? What was the system here?
The system is always trying to get a high line and push Cancelo, when he plays, into a centre midfield position to outnumber the opposition in there, which allows Kevin De Bruyne to get forward and support the centre forward on the day, which was Gabriel Jesus. You can't build up play with Jesus. He gets on the end of stuff, he chases stuff down, but you can't really play balls up to him. The tail of the tape, if you like, Stel. I think those Wembley finals and semi-finals, the grass always seems a bit longer and not watered. It wasn't a problem for Chelsea, but City v Arsenal in the semi last year. We've already seen it this year. I've seen it with Salford in the final, Tranmere in the final. Those Wembley finals are a little bit sluggish, semi-finals in this case. And actually, the truth is, Chelsea's personnel, once Kevin De Bruyne had left the field, was far superior to the team coming out for Manchester City on the day. Now, Manchester City at their best, with their strongest team, you know, with Gundogan playing, and John Stones playing, You would see a better man, just two players there, Phil Foden starting. You'd see Manchester City being better than Chelsea in terms of personnel, but with what City picked, what Guardiola picked, and then De Bruyne injured, the best team on paper won the day, and the best team on the pitch won the day, so there was no complaints.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Rod, what did you make of Chelsea's system? Because, you know, Timo Werner had probably one of his best games. He had a lot of joy on his left-hand side, the City's right-hand side. Would you put Chelsea as favourites now with Leicester being in the final with them?
Well, no, not necessarily, because, you know, Leicester are above Chelsea in the league. Yes, Chelsea have probably got the better players, better squad, and arguably playing better, even though they lost last week or the week before. But, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question, that, but if it was City in, I'd be saying, yeah, City's all day long, but if Chelsea play like that like yesterday, then you may have to bet against them. But yeah, no, Leicester can turn. They've got some good players left, and if they turn up, it'll be a good game. But you know, if Chelsea really turn up, they should win. But you know, Leicester, you can't count them out because they are third in the league.
Okay, fair enough. Well, look, I know Leicester beat Southampton 1-0 to get through to the final. Iheanacho scored the winner. He seems to be in a good vein of form. Played up front with Jamie Vardy, with Ayoze Perez in behind, and no Maddison either, Saj. I mean, look, Leicester have had a lot of injuries this season. They've been quite unlucky in the Europa League, losing to Slavia Prague. And, you know, Steve is a big fan of Brendan Rodgers. What kind of effect would that have on Brendan Rodgers' stock if they were to win the FA Cup with him in charge?
I think he'd have a big stock, but I think he's already very highly regarded. And already, I mean, ideally, I would have loved him to come to Arsenal at the time. I was kind of wanting him to move to Arsenal from Celtic. Seemed like Arsenal never wanted to pull the trigger on that one. But I think he's highly regarded. I think he did a great job at Liverpool. I mean, the only thing was he didn't just bring back a trophy. So, you know, I can't speak highly enough about him. I think he's one of the best coaches out there, and probably next up, probably to be one of the next England managers as well, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. He's always spoke about wanting looking at that job holding that job in high regard, and I think he'd probably be the next England manager. Me personally.
Wow, Steve, what do you make of that one?
He mustn't fancy the Northern Ireland job then. I'd rather it be an English coach. But we've been on that route before. No, I think he have the capabilities. I go with what Saj said there. You know, I bet if the England job came up again, he would be mentioned. But I think he's more of a day-to-day man on the field. He trains every day. He never misses a session. I don't think he hands that much over to the staff. I think he would miss the day-to-day involvement that the Premier League gives, and the Saturday, Tuesday, possibly even Champions League, Wednesdays, Saturday again. I think he would miss that, being on the road, basically a scout for 3 to 4 to 5 months at a time before you go and get your team ready for a tournament. So I think he's that much of a coach, a good one, that he loves it that much, he'd miss the day-to-day and he wouldn't do it.
True, I never maybe not took that into consideration, but he does seem like a day-to-day coach, because he's very, obviously he came through at Chelsea, wasn't he, in the youth team and stuff, and then he moved on and then kind of went through from Watford to Reading and so on, and then did really well with the teams that he's had.
I think he'll be next, when Pep goes, he'll be next City manager.
We've had that, haven't we?
I'm
with you.
Okay. So tell me something. Was the Iheanacho's winner probably the luckiest goal you ever seen in an FA Cup semi-final?
No, he's capable of being lucky. A lot of his goals are lucky, but as soon as I say that, though, that can't be right. If you're continuing to be lucky doing the same thing, it's not luck. It's not luck. But he does... You know, at times he's clinical, and at he definitely is that innocuous finisher that just like, how's that gone in? And they only go in for certain types of players, and he's one. But like I say, the more times he does it, and he's having a right streak at the moment, it's less about luck and it's a bit more about judgment. Sorry, Rod.
No,
it just reminded me of one of those FIFA goals where like you're shooting wide and the defender is standing on the byline. It bounces off the defender and it came straight back to him. I mean, we're crying out loud. Did he play the lottery as well?
Got to buy the ticket, aren't you, still?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay, let's talk about the Premier League then. Rod, United beat Burnley 3-1. It wasn't an easy game. Let's be real. Greenwood scored and then Burnley equalised within moments. But then cometh the hour, cometh the man again, Greenwood. And finally, Cavani. It's kind of the performance that you expect from both teams, really. Burnley sitting back, United probing. I don't think United moved the ball quick enough in the first half. But listen, a win's a win at the end of the day. The gap is 8 points. I don't think United will win the league. But, you know, it's not mathematically impossible. And I guess another win next week, the heat will be on, no?
Yeah, of course. Well, all you can do is win your games. You can't worry about what City are doing or anyone else is doing. Just concentrate on your games. And I'm pretty sure that's what they're doing. Yes, it wasn't pretty, but you know, some of the goals were very good. Some brave substitutions as well, bringing Van der Beek on, bringing Rashford off. So, and then Van der Beek being involved with the goal. So, yeah, Cavani, great finish. But yeah, Greenwood, you said it before, Scott. You said it for 3 or 4 years when he was watching playing for the academy. The kid is just a goal, born to score goals. He's just a goal scorer. Either foot, yes, he needs to work on his heading, but that'll come. You know, he's growing his stature now. He's getting bigger, he's getting stronger, he's playing more games, and that's showing from the goals. You know, the first goal was just knew it was going to score. And then the second one, yes, he's got a bit of luck, but like I said, you don't buy a ticket, you don't win the raffle. So, yes, he's got it on target. It was a lucky goal, but, you know, he's on target and he'll take it.
Fair enough. Saj, did you see United's third goal by any chance?
No, I didn't actually get to watch any of the games over. I watched the Chelsea game and I saw a bit of the Southampton game, so the Arsenal highlights.
Okay, because I was going to ask you about Luke Shaw, and perhaps Steve can chime in with this one, because Luke Shaw made a fantastic challenge in the build-up to United's third. In fact, Burnley were breaking forward and he put his body in the way. He made the challenge, which I thought, oh, blimey, that you might do your knee in with that one. But he won the ball and United broke up the other end and scored. I mean, people talk about Luke Shaw, and look, I've been one of his biggest critics in terms of his form and his fitness, but this season he's been an absolute revelation for United. And it's scary to think that he's almost been at the club 10 years.
Was it that long, yeah?
Well, David Moyes, wasn't it David Moyes' first season? Or was it? No, it was Van Gaal's first season. So it was Van Gaal was there for 2 years. Jose was there for 2 or 3, was it, Rod?
Three,
so that's 5. Ollie's been here for 2 years. So he's been 7 years at United, Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
So he's becoming quite vital to United. I mean, they spent money on Alex Telles and he can't get a game because Luke Shaw's come on leaps and bounds. Even youngster Williams, he has another opportunity at left back.
I think it's a double whammy for me. I think it's gives Shaw the kick up the backside. I wasn't as convinced as others. People used to say he wasn't fit. I can't believe he wasn't fit being a top Premier League player. I think it's his posture. I think it's his shape. I think it's his natural shape. To call him overweight and out of condition, maybe there's people better judged than me to, but I was never having that. I just thought he was developing. He was away from home and could have been match fitter, but I didn't go with that overweight one. I just think that's how he will always look. And I think if you watch him next year after, you're not all of a sudden see a cross-country runner type of shape. He is what he is, but he's got a great set of lungs on him, great set of legs on him. And now he's put a delivery to go with his defending that when he goes forward now, he's got good players to pass it square to in Fernandes. And he's got, you know, good people in the box like Rashford and Cavani that he can put into an area where they're happy to go and jump and head a goal, more so Cavani. So his crossing's improved, he's getting noticed, and he's probably just at the peak of his powers at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And Saj, you being a former central defender, obviously having a partner alongside you, that understanding is vital. It's almost as if now, in fact, it definitely is now, that if you're a left back, you need your left winger or someone in front of you to be just as, you know, understanding as you are. We saw with Beckham and Gary Neville. It's almost now with Luke Shaw and Marcus Rashford, they've got that understanding. So Shaw knows when to overlap and Rashford knows when to tuck in.
Yeah, it's all about building relationships in teams with your partners. So right wing, right back, right wing, left wing, left back, left wing, two centre midfielders, two centre forwards. In the olden days, obviously, formations have changed, but it's all about building relationships and knowing your players and knowing their strengths and weaknesses and knowing when they're going to go and or when they're struggling and stuff. So it's football doesn't change, just positions do. You know, about, for example, high press and or low block and high block and stuff like that. You know, it's just a high press, low press and stuff like that. So it's just the names change and stuff like that.
Yeah, just recycle things, don't they? Yeah. Recycle things to make it snazzy for social media.
I think you made a great point there about body posture, body shapes of players. Seen so many players out there who just don't look naturally fit or run a little bit different or look a little bit overweight, and they just get typecast and thrown away. And I think that was partly what happened to Luke Shaw. But players with ability always come through and shine. Well, not always, but he has come through and shined. So he's been quite fortunate to do that.
Still, there's another player, you know, who's he gets a bit of a nailing off the media and the supporters. But that's really helped Shaw, and that's Fred in centre midfield and left midfield. He drops in and makes a back three alongside with Maguire in the middle of it. This is how United start off. Maguire in the middle of it, Lindelof to the right of it, and this allows the fullbacks to go high and wide. They leave McTominay in the middle of the pitch because he's strong, fit and capable. And Fred, they even picked up on it in commentary at weekend that, you know, do they need him there? But what they are allowing him doing there by going there, he's allowing Shaw to become a left winger and get forward and get on with the assists and get on with the quality. So whilst Fred gets a bit of a hammering, I did really pick up on that at weekend that you've just made a great point, Stel, that the combinations and patterns between Rashford and Shaw, but there's also a really good understanding, I think, between Fred and Shaw, who just drops from centre midfield to left back effortlessly.
Yeah, I think Fred gets knocked because he's not this flair player. You know, it's almost as if that these days, someone like Jordan Henderson, the players that are the workhorses, they don't get the credit that they deserve, even though they put in the shift. I mean, Fred was outstanding at Spurs last week. You know, the build-up to his goal was phenomenal. And look, I haven't been his biggest fan. When he joined United from Shakhtar, I was very excited because I saw him play in the Ukrainian Premier League. But obviously, you can't compare the leagues because of the quality. But, you know, it took him a bit of time and now he's playing out of his skin. So, yeah, fair play to the guy.
Yeah, it's quite interesting David brings up that point, actually, because the same at Arsenal as well, where Xhaka drops into left-sided left-sided position, and Tierney used to push up, and I think that's what has given Tierney a lot of praise this season as well. So very highly regarded in the Arsenal team and in the media and stuff.
Brilliant. Saj, it's all about your team then, Arsenal. After a famous victory in the Europa League, down to earth, I guess, with a bump, a 1-1 draw against Fulham. Huh?
Typical Arsenal, isn't it?
All right, well, tell me something then. Talk to me about Fulham's penalty, because you've got VAR, you've got offside, you've got this, you've got... What was your initial reaction when you saw it given?
Well, when I saw it given, I thought, it's a little bit clumsy, but then you realise that I didn't think he touched him. But then you think VAR would pick it up. And you can normally tell by a player's reaction whether it's a penalty or not. And a lot of the Arsenal players were in uproar, basically, that it was given. But there was obviously hoping that it'd be overturned by VAR, which it wasn't.
And then the equaliser at the end. Scotty Parker not happy with that, apparently holding was in the way of the goalkeeper, blocked his vision, Clutching at straws or?
Well, definitely clutching at straws, especially after they got one disallowed before for, you know, the, you know, VAR going against them that time, I suppose, as well. So, you know, I suppose Arsenal deserved a draw, but it's just typical the way Arsenal play. I think they get overhyped. They put everything on social media, on their own platforms. And not, I don't think there's anyone there actually that brings them down to earth and gives them a sense of reality.
So what would be a successful season for Arsenal then? Because I don't think you're going to finish top four.
No, so I mean, UEFA Cup would be successful, obviously. Some kind of trophy. And probably gives Arteta another year at another 2 years, you know, after the FA Cup win. Mm. And obviously trust the process, but still stay in 10th place.
True. Well, Rod has been destroying Aubameyang for the past few weeks about his captaincy or his credentials to be captain. And since Lacazette came in and got the captain's armband, he's been in hot form, but he went off injured with 20 minutes ago. Looks like it's a hammy. If it is, then he could be out for the rest of the season. That's a massive blow for you guys, isn't it?
Well, it's a massive blow, but it could be a blessing in disguise. I mean, it gives a chance for players like Martinelli and Eddie Nketiah and Balogun to hopefully come in and prove their worth. And maybe
but can you keep relying on kids? Because Saka's been carrying you.
Yeah,
guys.
But
Rowe's been doing the same.
We need to start again. A lot of those players are not good enough. So you need to see who's good enough now. We've got nothing to play for, really, except the UEFA Cup. So I'd probably just start again and try and play some of the youngsters, see if they're ready, to be honest.
Okay. Rod, what about Fulham then? Not a great result for them, especially conceding a goal 7 minutes into added time, but can I take any positives from this one?
So difficult. No. Losing a goal in the 97th minute, you know, you're fighting for your lives, you nicked a goal, and then, yeah, you can see the 97th minute. You should be fitting for Scott Park and Fulham, but no credit to Arsenal to keep fighting and getting a goal in the 97 minutes because, you know, they really got nothing to play for, have they, really? So they could have just lied down, but they didn't. They kept going. And credit to them to get a goal. But, yeah, Pickman for Fulham, you know, that would have been a big win for them. But, yeah, it's probably doomed. They're probably doomed now.
Yeah, big pressure, especially now that West Brom are 3 points behind them with two games in hand.
Yeah, like I say, it was a massive 2 points loss, you know, with teams below them games. And yeah, West Brom still got to win them games, but, you know, West Brom seems to have turned a little corner at the minute and started to get in a run of results, which is not good for Fulham. And can they pull it off, West Brom? I very, very much doubt it because they're just too far away from me.
Okay, I don't know if anyone here watched the Liverpool-Leeds game. I sure as hell didn't, but I know it ended one apiece. I don't really know what to dissect from this one because I didn't watch it. But what can anyone take anything out of this game? You know, Liverpool obviously criticised for their decision to join the ESL, which obviously we're going to discuss. And Leeds, again, on the back of a great result at the Etihad. It's another good point for them, isn't it, Steve?
It is, yeah. Rotated. Front line now, they're all fit. Salah missed out tonight, so I don't know if the manager's learnt more about his team and leaving him out, and Mane scores the first goal. I'm sure Jurgen Klopp, being the world head coach of the year, last year and year before or whatever, he'll know in his mind what his best front three is, but the rest of us don't know because they've been so inconsistent over the last 6 to 8 months. You know, fatigued, tired. Are they happy enough with the lot? We've discussed it on here before. The art of winning the Premier League and having a night out and getting up and getting about doing it again that Manchester United did so many times appears to have gone. And a lot of foreign players, I believe, have come to, you know, that was largely a British team, not completely, but really British-based with good hardcore values. Yet a lot of foreign footballers now have added to the Premier League with skill, pace, technique, took a lot of wages out of it. And they seem to get one Premier League ticked off on the CV, and that's enough for them. That's how it feels. There's no proof of that. It's just how it feels. And you just wonder, are the Liverpool lot, did they lift those trophies, celebrating an empty stadium, etc., but just actually thought, I've done it now, and they've not really set about doing it again. So not learned much about Liverpool tonight, Stel, other than you can get points off them these days, where for 2 years you really couldn't.
Sad, you're nodding.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've slacked off. I mean, maybe the crowd has affected them, where there's no crowd in there. But yeah, Liverpool have slacked off this season a bit. I mean, I don't know whether it's due down to injuries or playing throughout the summer or the lockdown, but everyone's had the same conditions, so there's no real excuses there.
Okay, fair enough. Right. Sheffield United are down, Steve. They're down. Sorry, I was going to mention it. But...
Yeah, they're down. And God knows what they're going to do. You know, we've been waiting for any type of rally this season, but it's not come. It's been dismal. Recruitment, the pink kit, the polystyrene cups of tea, the indoor cricket, the Harley Davidsons or the Bentleys, whatever it is, being videoed coming into the car park at training, the wasted millions on poor players. Going down is one thing, but you look at the Norwich City model, who kept the team, good young players, possibly learnt from their experience, and they've bounced back immediately in style. You feel that there's a long way to go between that. It'll go quickly, but a long way to go between now and the end of next season. But as I sit here now, I see Sheffield United going, and I don't see an immediate bounce back either, such as their poor efforts this year.
Saj, sorry to be cliche here, but can you tell our listeners how difficult it is to get out of that bloody Championship, man?
Can I say? I mean, you play so many more games and stuff like that, and obviously Norwich being the favourites, they've done fantastically well to come back up. But I think a lot of that has been down to the technical, the sport director of sport there, who's kind of held it all together. And you know, I was actually doing university this week and talking about Stuart. We was talking about him anyway, but they were saying how well he's done with the media, how well he's kind of united the club with the communications and stuff. And basically, they've got everything going in the right direction. Everyone in a unified direction. No one's splintering off. I mean, they made a few sales. They sold the young defender to Everton. But, you know, they had more than enough to cope with without him to still come up and be champions or... nearly champions.
So what do you make of what Steve said? Because if I remember correctly, the last time you were on the podcast, Sheffield United had beaten Arsenal 1-0 at Bramall Lane last season. And they looked a very, very good team. So where do they go from here now?
Well, it's the second season syndrome, right? Where they're quite comfortable. They try and build on it. But I think a lot of the problems came from the board and the manager, because they wanted to employ a director of sport or director of football or whatever to do all the transfer. And he wanted to be hands-on, bit of an old-school way of thinking. But not old-school way of thinking. He just wanted to take the whole lot on. But I don't know. You know, when there's lots of confusion up above, it filters down into the team and then there's lots of confusion. And in terms of recruitment, I mean, the recruitment's been really poor. They've not really built on what they had last season. What you want to try and do is build on season on, season out, like a lot of the top clubs. And, you know, you look at Sir Alex Ferguson, each year he'd buy a top player or he'd buy something to build on for the next season and give them a target and keep the players hungry. And I don't think that was the case this year with Sheffield United. I think they took last season for granted and maybe not worked as hard.
Well, I think the recruitment... As the goalkeeper, was it Vinny Samways that used to have the record of getting relegated? You don't sign him because you get relegated. Vinny Samways as well, but I'll check that after. But, the goalkeeper relegated with Chesterfield, nearly relegated with AFC Wimbledon, relegated with Bournemouth, relegated with Sheffield United, sold for £1 million, bought back for 18. And, you know, the club said, we think this represents good business for the club. When you start hearing noise like that, you start to get worried. We've already discussed what they paid for Brewster. Let's not forget they signed Jack Rodwell and Ravel Morrison. 20 million, I think, on McBurney. You know, there's been a hell of a lot of waste. But I'd just like to say this, and we've covered it, but not for a long time. But just a reminder, I think they were in fifth place in the Premier League when Ollie Norwood scored that free kick at the Holt End Aston Villa that was 3 yards over the line with the VAR machine not working. And the referee chose not to give it. From that moment, Sheffield United, for me, feel have been cursed. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong since that moment. Aston Villa stayed up on the back of getting a point that day and not losing three. And that just shows you what football is. It can go for you, it cannot. And they were just about to go, I think, into the European slots with a disallowed goal, which was 3 yards over the line. And it looks like nothing has gone right ever since. That club has been cursed since that moment.
Do you know what? I shouldn't laugh, but the player that's got the most relegations from the Premier League is Nathan Blake. And right. the first club he played for that got relegated was in 1994, and it was Sheffield United.
Right.
You couldn't make that shit up.
I actually played in it. He was a good player. I mean, he was called Nathan Blake. I remember on trial at Cardiff. He was coming up from Cardiff. He was brilliant.
Yeah, he had to spend time at Blackburn, I think, and Bolton, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Herman Ryderson was another one. I think he holds the record as well with five.
Palace, yeah.
He was a nutcase.
He's a good player.
Yeah. What did you play with him?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I was there when he came over from Iceland.
Yeah. So is it true he loved getting players in headlocks?
Not me. It wasn't me, so it's fine, you know. Didn't say anything else.
All right, okay. So let's talk about this European Super League then. I'm not going to say it came left field, because I think last year there was talk of a Super League being formed, but because of COVID, it was put on the back burner. But yeah, six Premier League teams, Tottenham being one of them. I don't know where that came from. We don't know if there's going to be any German teams, because Bayern and Dortmund are 51% owned by the fans. They're going to put it to a vote. Barcelona and Real Madrid aren't even confirmed because they need to go to a vote as well. So effectively, it's just six Premier League teams, three Serie A teams, and the rest we don't know. We don't know if Paris Saint-Germain is going to come in. Apparently, their owners are dead against it. Apparently, Leipzig might be in there. I mean, they're owned by an energy drink company, so I don't think there's any votes to worry about there. So, first of all, gentlemen, Rod, you're grinning. I'll start with you then. How do you feel about this? That's the first question I'm going to ask all of you, like a therapist, you know, lie on the couch and put your head down and
tell us. It just seems like a load of American billionaires coming together and thinking, changing our game into American playoff bullshit. It's just ridiculous. But then you look at it, then that's how the Premier League started. You know, when they took over the Football League, so you know it's a difficult one. I don't understand why Arsenal in it. I don't understand why. I just don't understand it. I don't understand. There's no relegations. It's just ridiculous. It's just people that don't understand our game of football. They just don't. All they understand these numbers, and you know that'll bring in big numbers for them, and they'll earn a lot of money from it. So personally, I don't think it'll happen. I just don't think. I just can't see it. There's no. Yes, some of the big English clubs have come in, but I just can't see the rest of the teams you've mentioned: the Real Madrid, the Barcelona, the Bayern Munich, the Dortmund. No, I just can't see it. I just can't see it.
Saj?
Yes. I think the difference between this and the Premier League was that basically had the backing of the FA, so it could actually be ratified and go through. So that was, and money was filtering down the divisions. I mean, they are saying that they are going to filter some money down, but obviously, they're going to take a larger proportion of the income that they receive. Bayern Munich and Dortmund, I don't think will be able to go in it. But as you said, they got 51% owned by fans, which has been championed over here for a long time, and probably needs to be done now, because you know we don't want to be in the same situation. Well, hopefully, if this doesn't go through, we don't want to be in the same situation in the future. We want to try and secure English football teams playing in English divisions, basically in the English divisions with a relegation and promotions, what we're used to. We want competition. I mean, if you see like NBA and NFL, and you know, when some of the games, when they're dead rubbers, there's nothing to play for. They're not competitive. That's not what English football is about. We need to see competitive football, whether it's promotion or relegation. Whatever game there is, we want to see something to play for. So it's just a shambles. And what else I want to know as well is probably how far did this go down? As in, like, obviously the owners have been talking. Did the technical directors know? Did the how far does it go? Because the managers don't seem to have had a clue. They only seem to have found out through when we found out, which, you know, isn't great for club communication.
Yeah, I think Woodward has stepped down from his role at UEFA, because I think every chairman or something have got a specific seat on the UEFA board, or something like that.
The guy from the Arsenal CEO was only been appointed 60 days ago onto one of those boards, and he had to kind of step down because of them moving. I think a great idea would be just to ban these teams from European competition straight away, immediately. Right. And I think that may happen.
Well, see, this is the thing, and I'm going to ask this question to Steve, right? Article L9 of the Premier League states that once these clubs signed to the Premier League or agreed to be part of the Premier League, they can only play in competitions that are recognised by the Premier League or allowed by the Premier League, which means the FA Cup, the League Cup, Europa League and UEFA and the Club World Championship. This Super League is not on the list. So these teams cannot legally play in this Super League. So how are they getting around it? Unless they feel that, you know, let's take the punishment, whatever, you know, the Premier League throw at us, or whatever the court of arbitration of sport is going to throw at us. Because really and truly, what Gary Neville said the other day is, even though I think that Gary Neville is a dickhead, he's kind of right in what he said. Like, you know, teams should be deducted points. They should be stripped of any titles. Just rip it all away.
Yeah, well, there is that. But as you say, you know, the game is awash with money, and the stronger getting stronger, and the, you know, they're getting greedier from it, it appears. I read a stat today that I think there's 1.1 billion Manchester United supporters. Whether that be armchair, loyal, season ticket, young, or across the world, you know. So if they invest in their team by watching them, you know, across the world, as opposed to whatever the capacity is at Old Trafford these days, you know, the wealth that would bring that one club alone, with Liverpool, you know, not far behind. City and Chelsea have got current money and current status, but in terms of you know, like a legacy and what's been set, it's Manchester United and Liverpool that are the two biggest clubs in England and the world. And they're going to obviously look at this now to recognise that they can just go from strength to strength and not worry about the weak and the poor. And that seems to be where we're at. I think Rodri covered it. The two lads there covered it superbly. I'd just like to say I'm a little bit irritated by the fallout of it with the ex-pros. I think Rodri and Saj have actually spoke better than almost all of the ex-pros that I've heard talking about it, because it's genuine, it's authentic. I've spoken to dozens of people about it today and everyone's got an opinion. But if you put a camera in front of an ex-pro, I mean a top ex-pro, and they're saying, I'm so emotional about this, I feel sick, it just feels disingenuous for me. Of course, they're talking a lot of good sense at the same time, but I think they're getting more admirers from the people and the public, they're getting more followers. And I just think it's a little bit of a cosmetic act when they're talking about how emotional they are. I think the two lads have just done it better on your podcast.
There you go.
Thank you. <That's> lovely.
The thing is that the whole purpose of this is obviously surrounding money. UEFA have revamped the Champions League because they bent over backwards for these teams so that they can, you know, they can keep their noses straight so it won't be bent. But see, this is the thing, right? It's all about money. And what we've noticed in the past, I'd say since the first lockdown, we heard how are clubs going to survive without fans going into the stadiums. Okay, most clubs are still above water, but the elites are fine. They say that they've made losses, but let's be 100% honest. What's a couple million for them? Let's be 100% honest, right? I think what they've now seen, these big clubs, they've seen that, well, even though there's no fans in the stadiums, people are still watching because there's the pay-per-views, there's loads of different ways of streaming football matches now, right? If Amazon get their hands on this, if Netflix get their hands on this, there's more money. And let's be real about this. The Glazers, and I know this for a fact, the Glazers want Man United to be pay-per-view. They want their matches to be pay-per-view because they can make more money out of it. With Sky determining the matches or BT determining the matches, United don't have a say of when these matches are played. They don't get a bigger cut of the TV money. But now, with this Super League, every team that's there, they can stream their matches on their own platform, MUTV or Liverpool Fan TV or whatever channel, and they make all the profits out of it. That's all it boils down to, is it not?
Isn't JP Morgan funding it? So they're not going to come into something without making a big chunk of change as well. So it just stinks of American billionaires just getting together and let's see what we can do and make more money. Like that Gary Neville says, he is a bit of a dick. I've got on his bit of a soapbox about this, but he is right what he's saying. They are scavengers, aren't they? Billionaire scavengers, just scavenging. And, yeah,
I'm going to throw a grenade in here, right? And you guys can disagree with me, and I've got no problem with it. I don't understand the outrage from a lot of United and Liverpool fans about this situation. And I'll tell you why. How much money do you think Manchester United Football Club has made over the years from the Munich Air disaster? How much money? Because that's a big part of the club's history, right? I'm pretty sure they've used that as some kind of marketing tool. I mean, we've seen the Munich tunnel, right? How much money do you think Liverpool have made through the Hillsborough disaster? They've been milking that cow for years. So we can't sit there and pretend that, you know, these clubs have been clean cut since even, you know, before the Americans took over. It wasn't just because of the Americans. They pushed it, don't get me wrong. As you quite rightly said, Rod, they've all mucked in together to come up with this plan because it's very NFL related, isn't it? There's no relegation, no promotion. The money is there's a salary cap, et cetera, et cetera. But we can't sit there and pretend that Man United and Liverpool haven't been immoral for many years.
I think that comes down to all clubs and that comes down to all governing bodies as well. If you look at the Premier League, FIFA, they're all corrupt as hell. I mean, they're all self-sufficient. UEFA's self-regulated, not so much the Premier League, but governed by the government. But lots of these companies are self-regulated and they just do what they want anyway, you know. And they use marketing to also try and get whatever they want. If I take Arsenal, for example, look how many kits they bring out. Look how many designers they use to bring out their kits just to sell more kits and market employees. Everyone does it.
I think that's why, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool are the biggest clubs in the country because the seats, even though they have won a lot, the seats with history as well, and some of it, you know, not so kind, in the Hillsborough and Munich. To gain fans from it, especially Munich, how people felt sorry for them and they come home and how well they did, the players that survived. So, you know, it's part of the history and, you know, what they're going to do, you know, act like it doesn't happen. And it's part of the history, so they've got to, like, celebrate or the anniversary or mourn it or whatever. They can't put it in a box and not mention it. So, yes, they do gain from it, I suppose, from selling, but, you know, it's part of the history, especially of Manchester United.
So, Rod, if you were the Premier League, what would you do? What would your decision be with these clubs? Do you say to them, right, you can go, but you can't come back? And if you do decide to come back and we change our mind, you're starting off at the bottom.
Yeah, if that's the, I can't see them pulling away, making all this effort without a loophole in this contract or somewhere along the line. Because why would they, if in the Premier League contract, if they can't play for any leagues that are not known to the Premier League, then how is it even possible? And if that's the case, then yeah, say if you go out, you don't come back to the Premier League, and if you do, you start at the bottom of the pyramid. As simple as that. And you probably see them renege on the deal, and it'll be forgotten about. Because, let's not forget it, Champions League, European Super League, the Premier League is the bread and butter of any title, any league, cup, competition. That is the one to win. Yes, the Champions League is great, it's brilliant. And, Spurs will probably argue against it because if they haven't won it yet, and that's all what City want to do. Yes, they've won the Premier League and they want to win the Champions League, and rightly so. But, it's not the bread and butter. The league is your bread and butter, and that's the one you want to win. Best team in your league. It's more like winning the Champions League and you come third in the league. It just doesn't seem real anymore. Especially modern times, so you can come fourth in the league and win a Champions League. So, the Premier League is the bread and butter. So, I think if the Premier League put the foot down and just tell them straight and see what happens, and I'm pretty sure, like I said, they'll renege on the deal and they'll come back to the tail between the legs.
Maybe someone can answer this question, right? When you look at the teams that are going to be in this competition or potentially in this competition, are these matches going to be played in their home stadiums? So are we going to see Real Madrid against Man United at Old Trafford and the Bernabeu? And the reason why I ask is because we've seen the international club friendlies over the years in the summer, matches being played in Shanghai and Houston.
Well, that's where it'll go next. Look at the NFL model. They play in London. This year, they're playing 6 times in London. The most times they'll play. Then, next thing you'll know, NFL team will have a team in London. So that's the next thing. They'll be playing in Miami or Chiang Kai or wherever. That's where they're going with it, and that's where they will go with it. Where
they'll be playing. Is in the biggest stadium where they can maximize the most profits, basically.
Yeah.
So basically, the people that have been the fans in inverted, because this is the other thing, Steve, which I don't know if you know about this, but the clubs have said that long-term supporters, they call us legacy supporters. Yeah. And the new fans are the new fans, like your rants and bants wankers, people that haven't got a fucking clue about football. That anyway, cunts. What's going to happen with this now? Because obviously there's going to be fans that might not be able to afford to travel to Miami to watch Man United against Man City. They're not going to be able to go to China for health reasons. So what happens here? The only people that it benefits are the people that are in those countries, no?
Correct. So the wealth gets bigger, the interest gets bigger, the merchandise gets sold across the world instead of across your town. And everything just maximizes still everything other than the integrity and the loyalty of the English supporter that would watch his team home and away and be back for match of the day Saturday night, regardless. It's going to open it up to the world and its audience.
Yeah.
Okay, then what about let's say these 6 English teams decide to go into this competition and it happens. Apart from Tottenham, all those teams have won the Premier League in the last 20 years, right? The only team that's won the league outside of that group are Leicester City, if I'm not mistaken, right? So does this not make the Premier League more competitive? Does it not mean that teams like your Charltons, teams like Bristol City, they've got a better chance of winning a domestic trophy now that a lot of the big boys are out?
You think so? Go on, no, Saji, I'm with
you. No, go on. I was just about to say the same thing, basically the same. It'll make it much more fairer, make it a better competition to watch because you'll never know who's going to win a game. It'll be like the championship, erratic results.
Will it be flawed or will it be an asterisk next to it saying, yeah, but the Premier League teams weren't in it? That's the only thing I would say. But
the Premier League teams will be in it. Just Arsenal and that won't be.
So, ultimately, though, every year it's usually the top four that are in the semi-finals or in the finals.
Yeah.
And one of the top four that win it. I know Wigan won it. It was the last team to win out of the top four. But, yeah, it would be great for them. It'd be great for the other clubs, and it's probably a better watch because, you know, it's just the FA Cup. I remember the FA Cup was the best cup competition ever going up. You used to love it. But Saturday morning, get up, watch them in the hotel, post. Get on the coach, all the stuff before it. You should be brilliant.
Grandstand.
All that's gone down. So it's different now. So, yeah, but I wish we could bring them days back to do a brilliant.
Well, see, this is it, and the way I see it is the Champions League will be more competitive. I mean, look at the teams that are left. All of them, apart from PSG, are probably going to be in this tournament, right? So, what are we missing here? You know,
Del, do you really think it's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's a massive bluff, to be honest. I think it's a massive bluff by these clubs because they're trying to play
I'm not too sure. I think they'll try and push it through to the end, but I think they've lost so much public face with doing this. I think a lot of fans will leave the clubs that they've supported. I, for one, won't be spending another penny at Arsenal, for sure.
And what I don't understand is it, and now can you have six from one country, one from another, two from another, three from another? Shouldn't you have like all the same numbers? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but I think the clubs have to pay to enter the competition, mate. They have to pay to enter it. So I think it's more like a bidding.
Well, they're paying
into it, but obviously they're going to earn money, so they're not going to be paying into it. They won't be doing it.
No,
yes, they're going to pay a fee to get into it, but the fees that the TV rights fees would be phenomenal. And so they're always going to make money. They're not going to pay money to be in a Super League. Or it's just defeating the object, no?
Well, no, they have to pay a fee to enter it.
I understand that, but from pay a fee to get into it, yes, they're into it, but obviously they're going to get TV rights or sponsorship or whatever. So they're still going to earn money from it, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think when you look at... No, but if you look at someone like Tottenham, for example, who, no disrespect, I wouldn't put them up as an elite team, but they're in there ahead of, say, AS Roma, who've got more pedigree, or, you know, I think AC Milan are in it. I think Milan are in it.
Yeah, Inter Milan, aren't they?
AC, Inter and Juve, I think, aren't they?
Oh, okay.
AC Milan. You can argue Lazio, Napoli. Yeah.
Yeah, true. But, you know, I don't know. I just think that with these teams out, good riddance, as far as I'm concerned, because if they don't want anything to do with the Premier League, which is the league that made them what they are, really, modern-day football anyway, not talking about the 60s, 70s and 80s, you know. And on top of that, if you think about it, look at the founder members of the Football League. You've got the likes of your Notts Counties with Ian Birchall in charge. You've got the likes of Wolves in the Premier League, your likes of Bolton's, you know, the original teams. Maybe this is their opportunity. Now these big boys have gone, maybe it's their opportunity to start winning games and getting promotions and then winning cups. I think that's a great idea. Let them go. Fuck them. Let them go. And if they want to come back, you start at the bottom.
I think, I'm not sure how to, well, if I look at it from a player's perspective, I'm not sure what players are going to want to participate in that anyway. Though you're going to get big wages and stuff, it's going to be more players towards the latter end of their career because you're going to be banned from every international competition to play in. It'll be like the South Africa tour when they played cricket back in apartheid days. Although they could play for England. It'll be like a rebel tour kind of thing.
Yeah, they could do that, you know. They did that to my dad when he came to play for Swinton Rugby. He said, if you play outside of Wales, you can't play for Wales. And so the blackballed him. So yeah, they could do that. The international FIFA World Cup game.
Yeah, I mean, they have said that, and because they do that of England rugby players, don't they? If they play in France, they can't play for England. So,
yeah.
I mean, those same kind of sanctions can be placed upon the players. And, I mean, I believe the Arsenal players had a meeting with the managing director today just to find out what's going on and what's their situation. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne has just signed a massive contract there. I mean, is it null and void if they move into a different league? Is it, you know, does it change the contract of the players? Mm. I mean, there's so many questions to be answered.
Steve, what about this international football threat then? They won't be able to play the next World Cup.
It's going to cascade down. I've just been thinking about the EFL. People thinking it might suffer. I'm not so sure it would. It might do financially, but I can imagine just where me and Rodri live in the Northwest. I mean, Rodri played for the first breakaway football team, I think there was. I mean, well, I think obviously there was AFC Wimbledon, but when FC United had stood up against it and created their own football team against the Glazers, you know, and they're just about still going, but Rodri had the most successful full time there. And then obviously the EFL clubs, but I think there'll be a lot of supporters still that would start supporting the lower league teams, Bolton, Oldham, Rochdale.
Yep.
I think they'll go, no, I prefer to go and stand on the terracing in my own space. Takes me 20 minutes to get there, have a pint with my mates. And I think they'll start following new lower. I think they'll basically adopt second teams. And as for the international thing, what you've just mentioned, then obviously it's going to suffer, but the soul will go out of it as well, still, because whilst it is suffering, the likes of us, the football lovers, will stop caring. And it'll be just a crying shame, and we'll learn to live with it, sadly, and everything will be diluted. Just a bit like the time we've just spent in the pandemic. And then there'll be people get set in the ways, and they'll start rebelling, and they'll start hating the game, and there'll be a generation of non-football lovers way underneath our years. We're of a certain age where we love it that much, we're frustrated by it, but there'll be some that just won't take to it because it'll be garbage.
Yeah. I mean, I gave up my United season ticket 11 years ago because I was just fed up with the way the club was being run. I was fed up with the type of supporters that were turning up to games. And you know what? It's the best decision I made. I don't miss it at all. The one thing I do miss, as you said, Steve, going to the pub before the game with your mates, going into the concourse, having a sing-song, getting into the stands, standing, singing, you know? I think fans will do exactly what you said. They'll turn around and say, fuck this. Like, yeah, I'll keep an eye on my team, but I'll go see my local team. You're going to see Arsenal fans going to Crystal Palace, to Barnet, to Charlton Athletic, to all these other clubs.
Back in the day, I mean, Leyton Orient was always a second team for people north or east of the river. So Leyton Orient always used to get the spill-off of all supporters. These teams were playing away at the time. Mm. And I think that may happen again. Hopefully it will do, you know, just bring up these clubs who are kind of struggling financially. Probably deserve a bit more support than what we're giving to the bigger clubs.
And you won't have to sell a kidney to get a season ticket.
But I think, again, what you're saying about the season ticket, about people kind of reneging on their season ticket, I think they've always got fans to replace them, because you get lots of tourist fans anyway. 100%. And I mean, if you look at Liverpool, I mean, I think my friend told me it's like a 25-year waiting list to get a season ticket there, even though they've just created a new stand for season ticket holders. So I don't think fans watching a game is ever going to be a problem for the big teams or revenue of the big teams, because they'll always be there. Or there'll always be someone to fill the spaces for someone who doesn't come.
Mm. I think
they'll find fans, but it's just the atmosphere.
I mean, look at Highbury. Look at the Emirates. It's shocking. The Highbury Library.
No, it'd be like one of them charity games at Old Chapel. The alarms going off and just kids just screaming about them. It'd be just like that. And It's sad. These people ruining our game. These people who made the rules of VAR. Now these American guys. Just what is happening to the football game? It's just not the same anymore. It's just killing football. It's killing the game. Most popular game in the world, and just people who don't even understand the game are ruining it. And we're just people that are just letting it happen. It's just weird.
Yeah, I think this is going to go on for quite a while, but I'll tell you this for now. These owners and players or whatever, I think they're lucky that there's no fans in the stadiums, because there would be...
well,
Riots, mate.
I think you saw outside the Leeds ground. I mean, there was a whole little posse of Leeds fans, you know, shouting abuse at the Liverpool fans when they came in. And I think that's going to continue now and probably swell as more information is leaked out. I mean, the players are going to face the backlash of this and they'll probably, you know, filter their anger upwards. But I don't think it's going to stop the American owners. They don't care. All they see is the bottom line and they just want profit. They want to maximise it and that's it. So I think they'll take it as far as they can go. I mean, the government are talking about putting in sanctions, about higher taxes for these team clubs, different sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know what it'll take to dissuade these owners from not pushing forward with their plans.
It's crazy, isn't it? And Steve, as a Man City fan, you know, your team is close to winning this Champions League. Can you imagine if UEFA turn around tomorrow and say, right, we're cancelling the European competition. We're just booting everyone out that's going to go in this competition and we're going to replace them with the teams they knocked out.
Well, yeah. Genuinely, I don't want to be silly here and misquote myself. You know, I don't want that to happen. But, you know, Roger touched on it before. The Premier League is where it's at for me. The ones who appear to want to win the Champions League more than most is the head coach, the manager and the owners. But I think if you ask the supporters, the bread and butters and things like that, you can't miss what you've never had. Now, the probably thing, Manchester City, if you had a night in the stadium, I think it's in Turkey this year, isn't it? And we got our hands on the trophy and lifted it and you had a taste of it like you guys have had, you'd want that more and more again. But because we've never had it, it's not something that I'm craving, but there are other people who are craving it because they've never had it. So it wouldn't be a miss for me. Because I've never felt the emotion of it. But, you know, City not competing with integrity, with honesty, at the top of the Premier League, now that they're starting to win it, if that just ended all of a sudden, now that they are the strong favourites every year to win it, that would be more of a disappointment. It would be a killer for me, that. If we just became participants of the Premier League as opposed to champions-elect, that would hurt me more than the Champions League experience, which I've never tasted.
Mm. Did you guys see or hear the comments from Seferin, the UEFA president, where he laid into Woodward and Agnelli, the Juventus president? He's calling the 12 teams the Dirty Dozen. he says Ed Woodward is a massive liar. And he says Agnelli is the biggest disappointment of all. He says, I've never seen a person that would lie so many times, so persistently as he did. And the thing is, Seferin is, if I'm not mistaken, he's the godfather of Agnelli's daughter. There you go. It's all mental. It's all mental, but it's got us talking. It's got us talking about it, and I don't think this is going to end anytime soon, but I just hope that we can get the season completed and with no more fuckery, no more stupidness, man. Because, you know, football kept us going during lockdown, didn't it? Really?
It'd be interesting to see at what the earnings was and how much they've made, you know, without there being no crowd all season.
Mm.
And what the difference is. See how much did it really make a difference if they got all fans or not?
I don't think it's made much of a difference.
It probably doesn't anymore, no, you're right.
And the thing is, when you think about it, it didn't really stop teams from spending money either, did it? You know, City's spent money.
I think they spread the cost over, I'm pretty sure Arsenal did spread the cost over a longer
this
period.
This is it. It's all repayments, isn't it? So yeah. If they sign a player, it's all about amortization and whatnot, but they'll sign a player and say, okay, well, we'll pay you over the space of 5 years. So now they're probably saying, okay, well, we're in the midst of a pandemic, but next year, when we're in the Super League, we could pay everything off. There's so many questions that, you know, we could ask.
Yeah, massive questions. It'll be interesting to see how the managers react. And I mean, yeah. Klopp's already lost his head, saying that he's not happy with it. And
he
wasn't consulted about it. It'd be interesting to hear what Pep has to say and what all the other men, well, obviously except Tottenham manager, has to say about all the goings on and how they feel about it. And what's that take as well?
I don't think Ollie will be happy with too much. I remember when I first started playing for FC United and I went to watch United, and he always, and I used to see him in the lounge, he used to always ask me how he's doing, how's the team doing. He used to always ask me, he was the only player that used to always ask me. I don't know how he obviously was looking, was following it, and but he asked me a couple of times.
He opposed the Glazer deal. He opposed it. He wasn't a fan of the Glazers when they first took over the club.
Mm.
You know, a lot of the players weren't, but they couldn't speak up, could they? What were they going to say?
Yeah, no.
But hey, anyway, it's been a very eventful show. We've been going an hour and a half, which is like half an hour less than I thought it would, which is great.
That must be extra strong hair after that.
He's back early. I can't, what happens in the group chat, Saj? I can't describe it. Jesus Christ. Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's been another great show. Rod, you got any tweets?
Rod James, yeah.
There you go. Saj, are you using any social media these days? Or
probably a little bit more. Trying to. Saj_B, I think.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Brilliant. Hey, Steve, you going gym tomorrow?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I'm not starting on Twitter anytime soon, but you've got the best podcast in the land. That's all
Thank
I know.
Thank you very much.
There
Thank
you go.
Very much. Wonderful. Right, that's it. I'm not going to do any shout-outs or anything like that because I don't really use Twitter that much apart from trying to antagonise people, which is quite amusing at times, especially when you've got weirdos that bite every time. Not like Rod here, but, you know. So until next time, boys and girls, goodbye.